We're back on the Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Maple Leafs rolling as of late. Head back home for a matchup against the Sharks on Wednesday night. I'll say the Sharks reverse retro. That's how you do it.
That is how you do it. Justin Bieber stamp of approval as well.
That's all you need in this world is a Justin Bieber stamp of approval. And that's, you know, you made it.
That's all social teams need. Once Justin Bieber comments on something sports related.
Leafs send forever, but these are fire.
The NHL is like, look at Justin Bieber commenting on our product.
A weird weekend. So we saw that. But then Christina Aguilera was at the Penguins game.
You see that photo with Sid?
Yeah, that was strange.
Oh, weird, yeah.
Do they know? Like, why?
He looked uncomfortable. They don't know each other.
What is the connection between Christina Aguilera and Sidney Crosby?
She probably just wanted to meet him.
You cannot pick two more random people to have taken a photo together.
Can you, like, if a celebrity wants to meet a player or a team, if they're there, I guess if you put them on the Jumbotron, like, you owe them the other thing. But could Sidney be like, I don't want to take a photo with Christina Aguilera?
I have no idea why that happened. Is there a backstory? Like, I don't know. Anyway, a celebrity we'd love to take a photo with. Nick Kiprios, co-host of Kipper and Born. How's it going, Kipper?
I'm good. How are you? What was that awkward picture Connor McDavid took at the airport?
Oh my God. Yeah. That's the
two older people.
That's
were like,
the worst.
Like yanking on his arm. And he's like, oh my, get
it looked
me
like
out
he was
here.
Held hostage.
Yes. Was that Sid?
He had like four arms on him and he was like trying to pull away.
It was so bad. But yeah, Sid and Christina Aguilera, I don't really get it. I don't know where that came from. If you had to take a photo with one artist, one singer, performer, who would it be, Kipper?
Dead or alive?
Well, let's pick alive because I don't want you to go to the tombstone.
Oh, gosh.
Go with your gut. First one that came to mind.
Keith Richards.
Wow, nice.
Is he still around?
I think he's still around.
He's hanging in there.
Well, we don't know as
of
last night.
He's 78 years old.
I can't confirm yesterday.
He's 78.
It must have been celebrities hanging
for the stories. For one or two stories. Yeah.
There must have been celebrities hanging around the Rangers, no?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, it's the best. It was absolutely the
best. Kipper was schmoozing and, for sure.
We had one of the most famous bars in the world, the China Club. It was a dungeon in New York City. And every once in a while, like rock stars like Madonna or Billy Joel would just go down there. There'd be like, 700, 800 people. And they'd start jamming. There'd be a piano down there. They'd just start jamming.
Probably had no fun playing for that team, eh?
Oh, like
it's torture.
Christmas morning every day in that city.
I feel like the elites in New York somehow like find each other more effectively than like elites in
it's
other.
It's like a secret society.
Yeah, this, it seems like there's a secret celebrity society in New York, and it's Henrik just, Lundqvist is leading it.
It's just cool people. Yeah. It's just they're just it's loaded with cool people.
Well, right. Entrance into any club is not a problem right now for Mitch Marner. He's been the toast of the city here lately. And my take from last night is that, okay, we talk about confidence all year. Leafs need to be confident to play their game. I feel like it's more specific than that. If Mitch Marner's confident, then this team functions properly.
Oh, listen, you're preaching to the choir here. I've been telling Justin Bourne for well over a year that this guy is the engine of the Toronto Maple Leafs. If he's feeling it, he takes a lot of people along for a ride. And that's what's going on right now with this guy. And if you go back to his junior days, he did it with the London Knights. He had one of the best, he was a part of one of the best junior seasons in history, along with, Matthew Tkachuk. And they're just these type of players that create a lot of energy, and you better be quick to pick up on it. And if you do, you're going to go along for a ride. And that Matthews, big part of his 60 goal season last year, no question. And now even John Tavares rejuvenated and looking towards, maybe 40 plus goals. Hasn't done that since his first year as a Toronto Maple Leaf. And Mitch can do that for you.
Has he been, like, if his season was laid out on a graph, it wouldn't be, like, perfect. Every checkpoint's a little bit higher than the next one. But it almost seems like he's been better in every game than he was the last game so far this season.
You know what's crazy is that I look at it, and there's two or three points every game that he leaves on the table because guys can't finish. Mm. Like, he should be right up there, you know, every year with the Connor McDavids in the scoring title. Leon Draisaitl, those guys have unbelievable finish. We know that. But at times, you know, he's putting it on the tape for a lot of guys, and they're still not quite there in finishing. But yeah, he's a threat. He's not only a threat to continue his consecutive scoring streak, but multiple points on most nights. He's that good, and he's feeling it for sure.
And he's not far away from claiming the longest point streak in Maple Leafs history, which I think, you know, we kind of talked about how he's sometimes the younger brother in terms of Auston Matthews getting the accolades and him being a little bit not forgotten, but, you know, at times it's, you know, Matthews won the Hart. So this could be a nice personal accolade for Marner, not that I think that he cares and is going to put that on the trophy shelf, but it's just something.
He might care a little bit. It might be good for his confidence, which is
I think that's all
so
that
important.
Matters at this point.
Now,
is
why do
his
you
confidence.
Think that is, Ailish, that he hasn't gotten a little brother kind of feel?
I think it has to do with the contract and people just sometimes having a little bit of a distaste to Marner in their mouth.
Matthew scored 60 goals last year. Like, that's like a mark everyone can understand and get behind, whereas Mitch, maybe, you know, it's obvious how good of a player he is. It's
I think
just
people are
that,
just more reluctant to move back on their takes. Like, it doesn't make sense to me because he's been, as we just said, the heartbeat of this team. But
yeah, but he's been that last little while, too.
I totally agree. I don't know. It's interesting. It's like when people love to harp on William Nylander, and then he's, like, on a hot streak, and everyone's silent. You know what I mean? It's just the way that the social media world is.
I agree with you, Ailish, 100%. It just seemed like that contract was polarizing, and certain fans or hockey people thought that it was a contract unworthy of him, and now look at what he's been able to do. And, you know, the crazy part is people have been worried about Auston renegotiating as early as this July, and he's just 1 year later removed off that as well. So all of a sudden these long-term contracts are coming within a year or two, and all of a sudden you can't imagine or envision the Leafs without Mitch Marner long-term, much like a lot of people are doing that already with Auston Matthews. So they're in their prime right now. They've been around a while. And while they've done some tremendous work during regular seasons, including records, you know, breaking records in a historic franchise like the Toronto Maple Leafs, we all know that the work that will truly be judged will be April on. So they know that. The fans know that. But it's been a fun November, no question about it.
Okay, let's touch on Matthews, who is scoring, putting up points. Maybe it's still not exactly what we saw last year. However, the production coming, and I feel like it's no coincidence that Michael Bunting's played pretty obviously better the last couple nights, getting Matthews the puck, making plays to put Matthews in a position to score. Do we maybe understate how important, you know, the line mates have to be for Matthews, in that Bunting was going through it for the first 6 weeks of the season, but he's settled his game and it seems to be having a positive influence on Matthews?
Yeah, there's no question that it hasn't had this. We haven't had the same look out of Auston Matthews, and always the last few years regarded as the second best hockey player in the world if we anoint Connor McDavid, but he has not looked that way all season long, and hasn't been carrying himself as a threat like he did last season. And obviously people compare slow starts to slow starts, but he never had these lulls where on a lot of shifts this year where he's been lost and has not stood out or looked like a dominant player. So as he turned the corner now in the last week, the goal last night, again, was more vintage Austin Matthews coming through the middle of the ice like a bulldozer, mm-hmm. and then that amazing release.
And you saw the relief, too. That was a big selly.
Yeah, it was a big selly the other night, too, even mm-hmm. on a throwaway goal the other night. So you can tell the pressure and the feel that he's had on his shoulders the last little while to start acting like a 50 and 60 goal scorer again. And I think last night again was more of a look that we haven't seen all season long. And maybe that one's the one that opens up the floodgates. We've all said it from the moment that he struggled this season. He's the type of guy that could string along 12, 14 goals in 10 games. And let's see where this goes as early as San Jose on Wednesday night.
And this is probably something you've been asked and you've talked about on Real Kipper and Bourne a lot, but why do you think it just hasn't been the same dominant Matthews so far? I don't think that I am sounding the alarm bells like I would have maybe a month ago. We had this conversation, like, are you worried about Matthews' production? Like, he's going to get there and he's still doing it, but it's definitely noticeably different. Do you have a thought on why?
Well, there's a number of things that can come to my mind. Off the bat, much like a tremendous rookie season, there could be some sort of a feel of measuring up again. And this isn't a rookie season comparable, but it is a historic 60-goal season. And the fact that you start counting the moment the season starts and how close can you get to getting there again. And some people were talking about 70 goals, and maybe that weighed on him a little bit. Ailish, there's also the fact that he's probably contemplating his future. And we all know about a contract that is eligible to be renegotiated at the end of the season. And, you know, can't tell me that he's not thinking about what he wants to do long term and whether or not he envisions himself a Toronto Maple Leaf or not. I think Matthew Tkachuk woke up a lot of people's eyes on what can happen a year removed. The old benchmark or the bar was set when you actually became a UFA. That's what Tavares did to the Islanders. But Matthew Tkachuk sped up the process now where he, you know, in a lot of ways, give him a lot of credit for at least giving Calgary a heads up 1 year removed. And maybe Austin's deciding on whether or not he needs to do that for the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Don't you think that this postseason, though, is kind of the decision point, like how far they go or don't go in the playoffs? Like, do you think that that's 80% of the decision?
I think it's a factor. I don't think it's as much of a percentage as you just said. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I think it plays into it. The lack of success and where this team goes moving forward. Yeah, that's a factor here. But, you know, also... you know, he's not a Toronto kid. His skin probably isn't as thick as Mitch Marner's because Mitch grew up in this environment and has known, you know, the asks and the wants out of a very you know, tough market, a Canadian market. Austin's an Arizona kid. I don't have a really good feel on how he feels about the constant demand on him. And, you know, every once in a while he talks about needing a break out of Toronto or having Mitch and him or Bunting get out of the city for a little while, bring him down to Arizona. I mean, all of these are factors coming in on how he feels. But possibly, you know, that may be playing into, again, the slow start. You're asking me, I'm speculating here. But there's a number of factors, I think, that, you know, that can cause a slow start. The other one is conditioning, Ailish. I'm not sure he was in great shape to start the season or not. And again, I'm just going on what I see optically, you know, from my view. Is did he give himself the best opportunity to get out of the gate? You know, that's a question I've asked as well.
Quickly back on the decision point for Matthews, you mentioned it over the summer. I think it was a bit of a surprise to us that, you know, there's a decision there. And you said it that, you know, there was conversations in hockey circles that you were having pointing you in that direction. Are you still having those discussions? Are you still hearing stuff about that, or is it kind of quieted down when, you know, the overall discussion of Matthew's future?
Well, they've quieted down publicly, but behind the scenes, I don't think they've quieted down at all. I think there's a lot of people that believe that, you know, he could leave. And a lot of people that, you know, that I talk to on a fairly consistent basis. And maybe that's just a credit to Austin that he can keep his card so close that we're all still, you know, trying to come up with guesses, albeit maybe an educated guess. But, you know, only Austin really knows, maybe his family, maybe his agent. I think he played his cards really well at training camp. Speaking of it once and not bringing it up, I think the media's been on their best behavior. They're not pushing him. They're not going down that path right now, but you know, it'll come. And when it comes, it'll come like a tsunami, you know, mm-hmm. But, right now, it's all about wins and getting his game going, and it seems to be going finally in the right direction.
Is part of that discussion what the Maple Leafs believe? Like, do we kind of know where they sit, where they believe they stand with Matthews, or is this strictly coming from Matthews' standpoint?
I think MLSE, I think Kyle Dubas, I think Brendan Shanahan, they're in the same boat as the Leafs, the fan base, is that they hope, they're counting on him being happy and wanting to retire a Toronto Maple Leaf, or at least maximize the next 8 years. And that's all they can go on. But as far as MLSE being tipped off one way or another, I don't think that's happened.
In less important news, Mark Giordano has one of the contracts where...
Speaking of contracts...
Yeah, he's pretty excited to be a Toronto Maple Leaf. He's got maybe one of the best in the league right now. Clearly, his contributions at $800,000 are immensely important here for the Maple Leafs. And he wants more. Like, he's risen to this challenge of, I got to bite off way more than I thought I was chewing to start the year with all these defensive injuries. But when they do get a little healthier, do they have to, like, concern themselves with lightening his load a little bit? Like, if you give him a lot right now, but we got to dial it back because we got to make sure he's ready for the postseason.
100%. You cannot ignore the fact that he's closing in on age of 40. And we've seen other players, you know, even if it was Chara or Chelios or some of these great that just, you know, continue to push the envelope at that age, that, you know, the body's the body and it talks to you. And, you know, this is a credit to Mark and his ability to be so smart on the ice that there are times when I'm sure he feels a little tired or a little slow. But yet his IQ is so high that he maximizes his ability to still be effective. And it's been a great run. You know, they had a good run with Jason Spezza. They've had some luck with squeezing guys out and having them play for the love of the game and not the cash. And, you know, so far they've gone 2-for-2 on that. But no question, guys, that they're going to have to be careful here. Again, this isn't about November, December. I mean, the points are great. How hard you want to push during the regular season, but if Mark Giordano, you know, runs out of gas by April, this is all for naught. So you have to be careful here managing his minutes. And, you know, there has to be some nights when he's going to have to just take the night off. I know he doesn't want to. I know he wants to, you know, still act like he's in his, you know, early 30s and up for a Norris. But somebody's got to remind him, or he's got to remind the team, that this is all about April on, not November.
How impressed have you been with the way the Maple Leafs have really cracked down on defense, with the fact that they have three of their best defenders out, players like Liljegren and Sandin being forced into these situations where they have to perform, and maybe the idea that you might be out of the lineup if you make a mistake hasn't been there? It seems like they've really elevated to this opportunity.
Yeah, it's quite impressive, to be honest with you, and give Sheldon Keefe full credit that he's gotten them to buckle down, and that wasn't the case early in the first 3.5 weeks of the season. For me, it always starts from the net on out, and Matt Murray's been everything. I thought that, you know, he could be if he was able to kind of regain that feel that he had, I think, in Pittsburgh. And, you know, I always said it, that when you come in with that pedigree as being one of the most successful goaltenders to break into the NHL in history, there has to be something there. And so far, it seems like he's found it. And that's a big reason why the Leafs have been able to buckle down. And Samsonov and their third stringer and Sjogren as well. Like, they have not given up too many bad goals. And then when you factor the commitment to come back, take the middle of the ice away, how many block shots in the middle of the ice? How many block shots have we seen, you know, even from a guy like Austin Matthews, between the circles in his own zone? It's hard to get to the net against the Toronto Maple Leafs. And when you have committed guys, and, you know, I think that whole back check and coming back and back pressure is again led by Mitch Marner. Like, you want to talk about a complete 200-foot game. I'm watching the other night, Pittsburgh, where the game's locked up, and he's like racing back to knock a puck out of the front of the net, and not give up, you know, that next goal. When you see guys doing, like, when you see a Mitch Marner doing that, how can you not do it yourself?
Another part of that defensive puzzle is Pontus Holmberg, who, I got to ask you about Sheldon Keefe's comments, called him near perfect, that he doesn't make mistakes. Are we seeing perfection here from Pontus Holmberg, Kipper?
Gosh, I'll go through the video. I'll find something. Guaranteed. But it's nice to hear from your coach like that. And I think it's a shot in the arm for him. And, you know, the prospect that was supposed to be here and being talked about like that and doing that is Nick Robertson. When you get a mid-round pick like Pontus coming in, and all of a sudden it's not too hard to write his name every night in the lineup sheet, that's a bonus. And that's something that the Leafs haven't really had. We know the years of the buildup of Sandin and Liljegren and their first rounders, but to get a mid round pick right now out of Holmberg coming in and showing like he can contribute and make a difference out of nowhere, really, that's how you go to the next level, is when you get guys like that stepping in that might be a little unexpected.
Yeah, it feels like those comments might be for others, right? Like, it's almost a demonstration, because if you watch Nick Robertson, it is far from perfection, especially in the defensive zone. So it feels like, hey, you know, there's it's almost like the Nick Nurse thing. Like, if you don't play our way, you're not going to play. And it feels like, hey, there's someone doing it right, and he doesn't have the pedigree you have. And I'm going to lavish praise and continue to put him in a big role because he's doing those things correctly.
Oh, there's no question. And I think you're absolutely right. That Sheldon, you know, when he speaks of that, he's just not talking to the media or the fan base. He's talking to other players as well. So still a lot of work for Nick Robertson to go. I wouldn't necessarily write him off yet, but, you know, it gets tougher and tougher as the Leafs have more success and have other guys step up.
And as Jason Robertson continues a Hart trophy bid.
God, it's incredible.
Yeah, that is. We did a quarter poll on Real Kipper and Bourne yesterday on MVPs, and I had brother Jason there, mm-hmm. Leading the league in scoring and looking every much the part of an MVP so far after what 22 games.
See if it runs in the genes, maybe. Well, championship DNA, goal scoring DNA. Maybe it's still birthing in his blood, you know. It's yes. There. It's spewing.
Yeah, sometimes it does. Not everybody gets shot out of a cannon to start their career.
He just needs a little time.
So there's some time for Nick, and if it's not here, it'll be somewhere else. Mm. He'll get another crack if chances run out here.
Well, our favorite Nick Kiprios. Thanks for joining us this morning. Listen to Kipper and Born It later.
Warm my heart.
Thanks, Kipper.
Thanks. Have a great day, everybody.
You as well. Nick Kiprios, NHL. Oh,
we'll try to have a good day after.
Doomsday.
We might not. You know, well, we're going to have to continue asking the questions. But Kipper, he's one of the few, if any, that has said this and continues to say it. If you stand by it, I'm
pulse.
Like, all right, I'm a little bit worried every time he says it. I'd like that to not be a conversation happening behind the scenes. But I trust Kipper. I trust Kipper's sources. It's something we're going to have to monitor. Maybe we won't concern ourselves with it too much. But it's hard not to be a little bit worried about those comments.
It's certainly something to chew on. And it's time for Send the Chew On, brought to you by Great Canadian Meats.
Yum, yum, yum.
It's a two-parter. Very hungry this morning. Speaking of hungry, how hungry are you? Serge Ibaka's show had Fred Van Vliet on it as a guest. I think every week we have found a way to include Serge Ibaka's
show. They knew what they were doing. Our company knew what it was doing getting that show because it is a content factory.
They said every week Ailish and Justin will take something for a Great Canadian Meats.
Part of the deal.
And they'll chew on it from Serge Ibaka's show. Okay, so Serge just asked these like hot button questions. He goes, boom, answer. And I think you have to eat something.
We need Austin Matthews to sit down with Serge.
Oh, do we ever? Let's make Sportsnet. Okay, so he was asked many questions, but the two I want to chew on this morning start with a what if potential if a specific Raptor had stayed past his 1 year appearance here, Kawhi Leonard.
Okay.
What would have happened to the Toronto Raptors?
If Kawhi stayed, do we go back to back?
Three-peat. Yeah, for sure. It was just a perfect group of individuals, and we all understood everybody had the right mindset for the roles. I think definitely we would want a few more.
Three-peat.
Three.
Oh, that's...
He didn't stay healthy enough for two.
Well, Fred knows.
I'm a fun guy.
You'd get at least a three-peat of those kind of quotes each year.
I guess I got to give him credit. He did play in 57 games, played 60 for Toronto. So he stuck around long enough. Yeah, I guess it could have been there.
All right, so that's part one.
I still maintain, though, that they got the best of Kawhi and that things worked out.
All right, but that's just, it's chewy.
It's chewy.
Secondly, what's chewy is we talked about this ad nauseum before the start of the season. The rumored KD to Toronto. What would you do? Who would you trade? Would it be Scottie Barnes? Would it be all your futures that you don't really have?
Let me guess. This one's less chewy.
The cupboard. What would you give up for Kevin Durant if it was real? Well, Serge Ibaka asked that to Fred VanVleet, and he said, KD for Barnes? What do you think?
If Masai came to you and said he can trade Scotty Barnes for Kevin Durant, would you take it?
I want to do it.
You want to do it?
Mm-hmm. He hesitated.
I'm not a trade guy. I wouldn't do it.
So you would turn down Kevin Durant to keep Scotty?
Yes.
He's really pondering this.
That's more thinking than I expected.
Are you just saying for the camera to make Scotty feel good? Or you really need that?
I mean, listen, it's my teammate.
That was less convincing than I thought it was
not. Listen, he's my teammate. It's like, Ailish, do you like Justin?
He's been fine.
Yeah, he's my teammate. Like, that's a terrible answer if I was asked if I like you and I said, you're my teammate. I mean, it's Kevin Durant.
There's always editing, though. We got to watch the video before we cast too many aspersions.
It's a full-on clip. There's no editing. He ponders. There's a silence that is like, oh. But of course, imagine he said, yeah, I would do it. You can't say that. But maybe more is said in the silences than in the words.
Good for Serge. You just ask the questions no one else will ask.
We need Serge to come on our show and interview Kipper. Like, he's going to be like, Kipper, give me the, like, you can't lie to Serge Ibaka. Like, he's just got this presence.
I don't know if Kipper needs Serge. Or, yeah, Serge. I was going to say Scotty. He's pretty honest with what he's hearing.
Anyway, that's how hungry are you? Hungry enough for something to chew on, brought to you by Great Canadian Meats. We're going to take a break and talk to Devang Desai, our guy, producer of A Kick in the Grass, get back into some World Cup convo. We didn't get a chance to talk to him. We saw him on Cafe Diplomatico Day in the flesh. Since then, Canada is now out of the competitive part of their World Cup. They have one more match on Thursday. Let's unpack again Canada's loss with him, but also talk about the anticipation for the future with this team, because it's time we can start looking ahead. That's next on the Fan Morning Show. Justin and Ailish, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Diving deep into Leafs, Raptors, Jays, and NFL. The JD Bunkus Podcast. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We are back on the Fan Morning Show. Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Justin Cuthbert and Ailish Forfar. Canada's World Cup is over, but there's still plenty to talk about. Plenty to unpack. Lots more for around the World Cup to discuss. And to do that, we got Devang Desai, producer of Kick in the Grass, and of course, a valued member of our team here at Sportsnet 590, The Fan. What's going on, Devang?
Good morning, Justin. How are you doing?
We're doing okay. Yesterday was, I don't know, we were kind of going through the emotions, trying to figure out exactly what it means, how we feel, what Sunday was like. I kind of, like, we haven't talked about it at all today, waiting and anticipating this interview. So I just want to start with sort of the emotion, how it was in the moment, how it evolved, and where you're sort of sitting now that we're almost 48 hours removed from Canada's decisive loss at the World Cup.
It's funny. I think I was a lot more maybe okay with things as the game played out and watching Croatia kind of take over and their best players being their best players and the injuries that Canada was dealing with. It sort of made sense to me at the time as you're watching Croatia slowly take away the game. But just taking the rest of this tournament into account and watching some of the other teams, I couldn't help but think, I wonder, what if John Herdman decided to change things tactically very quickly after taking the lead? And I know it's Monday morning quarterbacking, but that's the overriding emotion I feel today, because we've watched some other teams with less ability, you could argue, develop different plans for that situation. So I wonder if we could have done that as well.
Yeah, I've been kind of thinking about that as well, because I don't, my take is probably not educated enough to be really, really strong about it. But I feel like there are teams doing less and getting more out there, like Australia with a win, Costa Rica with a win. Like, there are other teams with less talent doing more. Have they faced Belgium and Croatia? No, they haven't. That's only Canada's schedule so far. But it feels like there could have been a little bit more from the managerial side. And just hoping you can expand on that, actually.
Yeah, the way the team was set up initially, I think we shouldn't understate how good Croatia is. And I fully understand that Australia and Costa Rica haven't played them. But I think looking at their midfield before the game, there are some things you could have done to maybe alleviate some of the pressure on Atiba Hutchinson, who's playing his second game in 4 days and is 39 years old. And Stefan Eustachio, who wasn't totally fit coming into the tournament and then subsequently got hurt later in the game. I think with that in mind, you maybe packed the midfield a bit more, but I do think playing Croatia was also one of those nice wake-up calls where it felt surreal on Wednesday against Belgium, and then it felt horribly real on Sunday against Croatia, and I think that's the magic of the World Cup and also the pain of it.
Did we lose you, Devang? We got you?
No, you got me.
Okay, just for the Morocco game here, Can the World Cup be salvaged for Canada in this game, or is it kind of too late given that they have been eliminated and that win, if they would be able to get a win or able to salvage a point or whatever it is, would be done knowing already that they were ousted from this tournament?
No, I think there's something definitely to play for, and I was listening to Alistair Johnston talk about making history, and I think we shouldn't lose sight of that. Getting a win at the World Cup in your first appearance in 36 years would be a landmark moment for this program. And looking ahead to 2026 and thinking about the players who can get appearances here against Morocco and use that going forward is massive to me. I think one of the positives, the biggest thing to come out of Croatia is that we'll have players who have experienced that the next time we play in a World Cup where perhaps we're the favorites because we might be the big fish in our groups of three. So I think there are a ton of positives you can take away, and 3 points against a really good Morocco team who's arguably been one of the more impressive teams at this World Cup would be a huge statement.
You mentioned looking ahead to 2026, and I think with the conclusion of the tournament on Thursday for Canada, we'll start to really look at what John Herdman's future might be with this organization. I know there's been some weird off the pitch stuff that happened with the whole Croatia and the drama, like that aside, him maybe looking elsewhere for employment opportunities, just the way that he managed this World Cup. How do you start to evaluate what you think his future is, if anything, with Canada soccer?
It's a great question. It's a question I kind of began diving into yesterday during the post-board myself. It's big. I mean, what part of me is like, well, he brought us here and he brought us to this mountaintop, and that achievement is massive alone. But is he the same person that can bring us to the next step? There's debate to be had there. I think John Herdman's achievements with both the women's and men's program have been outstanding. But as we've seen at this World Cup, I think there's levels to this. I wonder if the Canadian program looks at their situation and thinks maybe there's someone else out there to take them to the next level. The problem is, I don't think the CSA showed a great track record in that regard. And John Herdman's kind of saved them from themselves. So do you want to lose that safety blanket? That's a really tough call.
Did you see a little bit of inexperience with him as well? Maybe with the comments, maybe with the decisions. And is that something that is kind of acceptable because this is the first time at this massive world stage for a head coach?
I think so. And I still don't think the comments are why Croatia beat Canada 4-1. And I think we all know that's the case. But there are little things, like I think he probably could have shaked the Croatian coach's hand after the game. I know that's not a huge deal, but in terms of walking away from this incident with pride and holding your head up, I think that might have been a way to alleviate some of the pressure that was built there. But it was a learning experience to everyone. I still love a lot, maybe 90% of what John Herdman has done. And the passion he brings and the way he talks to his players are the reason they made it to Qatar. So to ask him to change, maybe, or ask him to adapt as quickly, I think might be unfair, but definitely some learning experiences.
Herdman or not, the next 4 years is critical. What they do. They can't waste really any step here because it's clear they need to get better if they're going to compete for, you know, getting out of the group, getting a victory, whatever it may be, on home soil and when the World Cup is in North America. You expressed concerns just now about Canada soccer. I was expressing concerns about what the next steps would be moving forward yesterday. Blair was on with us yesterday, and he was talking about the importance of getting higher quality matches. Like, what needs to happen here? And the simple answer might just be money and funding and all that stuff here. But beyond that, what do they need to do to make sure that this trajectory remains upward?
I think the funding answer might be the easiest one, but I think it's the most important. And looking at some of the TV numbers that came out of Sunday, the interest is obviously there, and the stakeholders in this country will have a big reason to continue to maintain that interest as we get closer to 2026. So I think it doesn't just mean, I think, at the top level, but the infrastructure in this country and the leagues we have, they are on the ascent, but there's a lot more work to be done there, and that takes a lot of cash. And it's an investment I think we usually see for different sports in this country, maybe hockey being the most obvious. But if we want to be serious about this thing, I think there is a ton more of investment that needs to be done. You can't just go out and find center backs or find set of midfielders to plug in to the World Cup. It doesn't work that way. And I think it starts at a way different level. And we've seen some success stories, in the Canadian program already. But to have that be the case, just on average, takes a lot of work behind the scenes. So I think overall it's cash, Justin, that I'm looking for.
Okay, let's get to the rest of the World Cup and the beginning of match day three today. It's obviously too early with the groups to be decided over the next few days to really understand who will be given the advantageous draw. But when you look at it now, is the draw breaking for any team in particular? Is there anyone that stands out as in a good or advantageous position at this point that may have a better path?
If England can take care of business against Wales, and I think it would take a pretty lopsided defeat for them to not advance, I'm looking at them. I think the questions I had before the tournament about Gareth Southgate seem to have been founded in some truth against the USA regarding his tactics, but I like how England sets up going forward to the knockout stage. It's tough. I mean, if you look at the games we saw yesterday, finishing first in Portugal's group seems massively important in terms of going forward and avoiding some of the big dogs. So I like how Portugal sits, and I like how England potentially sits depending on today's result. I think they should be okay, though.
Do you think it's justified that Brazil is the heavy favorites plus 200 range to win the World Cup? Have you seen that type of dominance from them thus far?
Sort of. It's interesting. I think they have 9 or 10 or 11 or 20 attackers that could start for any country in the world. And it's just a matter of how Tite can employ them or how he utilizes them together. It took something pretty brilliant from a trio of current Real Madrid and former Real Madrid players yesterday and that Casemiro goal to get the result there. But overall, I think Brazil should be the favorite. And it's not just because of those attackers I mentioned. I think from the back out, from the goal out, they haven't really been tested at all. They haven't really faced any shots at all. And I think that's a testament to how dominant they are back there. So just selecting the right forwards, figuring out who they're going to employ up top is maybe the biggest question. But I think Brazil should be the favorite right now.
If you had to choose between backing a South American country, I guess Brazil or Argentina in particular, versus all the European nations, mm-hmm. What do you think would be a better bet if they were both hanging around the plus 100 mark?
Oh. Great question. Some of the countries I've been most impressed by are in Europe. France, even though they've been decimated by injuries, obviously they have a pipeline of extremely good players. And you're seeing maybe some of the more unheralded ones for them step up in big ways. I mean, Adrien Rabiot is a punchline for many, but when he puts the French kid on, something happens to him. And Olivier Giroud is not only extremely handsome, but extremely prolific at the striker position. So I like France. I like Spain a lot, too. I think the Germany game was really good, but Spain has a wonderful manager and a wonderful collection of really good young players that will be big problems for many years to come. But even now, I think I might go Europe. You know what? Before the tournament, I would have said South America. For sure, I've been a bit disappointed by Uruguay, definitely. So I'll lean Europe because I think even Croatia as well has the tools to make a run here.
Oh, so, yeah, I mean, I was expecting that, you know, the Croatia loss, it could age well here, but maybe it could age really, really well where Canada ran into a team that actually has a chance
moral
of going pretty
victories.
Far. Yeah, we're grasping. We are grasping right now.
I think we need Belgium to figure it out. Apparently there's a ton of infighting in the camp and they all hate each other, but we need them to figure it out as well for some more uplifting. Hey, we only lost them by one goal talk.
Yeah, Belgium, I don't think there's anything safe in Belgium here. I think they're going to get absolutely run over by Croatia, but we shall see. Messi and Ronaldo, varying degrees of success. Actually, both of them faring pretty well here in what should be the last act on the international stage for both of them. Which one do you think has a better chance of having that, like, swan song being, you know, with lifting a shiny gold trophy?
I wanted to say Messi. I wanted to say, for various reasons, and just generally me liking him probably more. I do have some problems probably with Argentina going forward, and I have way less questions about Portugal. I think the team in general in Portugal is outstanding, and though there are some concerns, I think, defensively or how they're protecting their back line, I think Portugal is set up to do really well here. I do love the fact that we've got a successor to Hand of God, and it's Hair of God now, with Ronaldo trying to claim that Bruno goal. But the only thing that can maybe take down Portugal is Ronaldo's ego, which maybe is ironic in itself. But I think the team that's around him and the play of some of their star players, including Bruno Fernandes, who was incredible yesterday, it bodes really well for them.
It is really remarkable, eh? Just being like so angry on the bench that someone else is getting to slot in the penalty kick. Like it's kind of crazy. I don't even know how an athlete that's been that successful could act like that for so long, but that's neither here nor there. Big one today with U.S. and Iran. U.S. needs a victory to qualify over Iran. What do you expect from that match?
Fireworks. I mean, I think they played in 1998, and it was a huge match for a lot of reasons that included non-soccer stuff, and I think the same has happened for this match as well. If you watched Tyler Adams' press conference, the captain yesterday, I think that was pretty intense, and he had a great answer for some tough questions. But the USA needing a win is going to be very interesting, because I think Greg Berhalter has done a good job, sort of, in terms of managing expectations and playing really well against England, but when they have to go for it, what are they going to do? I think Gio Reyna not playing that much has been a big talking point in the USA camp, and he is one of your true, quote-unquote, game breakers. So play him more, play Brandon Aaronson and him together. I think they're going to have to go for it, obviously, to get a win and move forward. So seeing the U.S. needing a goal, needing 3 points is going to be really interesting. I think they should be okay, though. I like Iran in some scenarios, and I think they're going to have starter Azmoun starting in this game, and that played a huge difference against Wales, but I think I'm going to take the States here in a really tight game.
Okay, last one for you, Devang. If you had to watch one game from this slate of games, match day three, which one stands out the most as a must-watch appointment viewing?
Oh, wow. I wish I had the schedule in front of me. How good is my memory? I'm going to go with Uruguay-Ghana. I think we remember the very controversial Luis Suarez handball in 2010. Then they gave the sure Ghana goal and basically changed that tournament on its head. This match has huge stakes on it. Ghana needing a result, Uruguay needing a win and some help from Portugal. A lot of history, a lot of tension. I think it'll be great viewing.
Looking forward to it. I'm not so pleased about the fact that we don't have live games while we're on live radio, but Ailish has said that it's been my best day since the World Cup started.
Watching.
So we'll consider it a good thing. Devang, appreciate you coming on, and we'll chat again soon.
Thanks, guys.
It's Devang Desai, producer of A Kick in the Grass with Dan Riccio, Jeff Blair, soccer minds uniting to take us through the World Cup. Reminder, get your wake and rake submissions in. We're doing it around, 8:30 today?
Mm-hmm. A little earlier.
So make sure that you're listening a little earlier today. If you only stop by for the wake and rake, you should be listening at all times, though. Let's be honest. We'll take a break. We'll be back with Alvin Williams to discuss the Raptors' victory over the Cleveland Cavaliers and beyond. We'll do that next. Sportsnet 590, The Fan.